mindfulness mode.
You'll be surprised how many things you're really missing, you know, whether it be visually, sounds, any kind of thing where you're missing what's truly going on around you.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome to the show. Today we're going to be talking about sports injuries, and we're going to be talking specifically about ACL injuries, injuries of the knee. And I'm here with Dr. Keegan Hadley. He's a doctor of occupational therapy, and he does psychiatric and neurological clinical research. He's also an Amazon best-selling author who specializes in psychological treatments, and he specializes in a treatment called ACT, which we're going to be talking about. That stands for acceptance and commitment therapy. And as far as I'm concerned, it really ties right in with mindfulness. And he really is the man who has a deep understanding of all of this, because he personally experienced emotional distress as a result of a sports injury, which we'll be talking about. So, let's get started with the interview. Dr. Hadley, thank you so much for joining us here on Mindfulness Mode. Are you in mindfulness mode today?
I sure am. Thank you, Bruce. Happy to be here.
Great. So what does mindfulness mean to you, Dr. Hadley?
It means living in the moment where you presently are, because, you know, regardless of what is going on in that situation, a lot of people tend to have a bit of an aversion to mindfulness. You know, living in the moment, it's particularly difficult because we have social media, we have 43 different Netflix specials that just came out, and everything's pulling us in different directions, whether that be looking forward, looking back. But really living in the moment, even if that makes you walk through some difficult emotions, is very important. And it's something that I have to do on a regular basis personally, as well as with my clients. So.
Well, Dr. Hadley, you're a specialist in this whole area of ACL, and maybe you can tell us what that is, first of all, because I'm sure we have listeners who are wondering. Yeah. So let's start with that.
Yep. So the ACL is one of the four main ligaments that stabilize the knee joint. It stands for anterior cruciate ligament. There's the posterior cruciate ligament. Both of those two are right in the middle of the knee joint. They form an X. The cruciate kind of, lends its credence to that. And then you have on the inside and the outside of the knee, you have the medial collateral ligament, which runs down the inner part of your leg, and the lateral collateral ligament. And altogether, those kind of form the stabilizers of your knee joint. Particularly, you know, if you watch sports or anything like that, you've likely heard of the ACL. It's the most commonly injured knee ligament, and it prevents anterior translation or forward movement of your thigh bone over your shin bone. So it essentially acts as your brakes when you're sprinting and go to stop.
Yeah, well, I've met so many athletes who have experienced injuries there, ACL. Why is it so prone to injuries?
That's the billion-dollar question. There's lots of reasons for that. I think it has to do with the way we train presently. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, that probably has a lot to do as far as we're always training the muscles that assist you with acceleration, but we spend very little time on the muscles that decelerate you, and only changing through brief ranges of motion and getting very strong, like everyone mm-hmm. does lots of squats and is strengthening their hips and those muscles. But there's a lot of lower leg muscles that are essentially the first line of defense for your knee that people have probably never worked out in their life. And things like that, just as far as balance between front and back of your leg, one leg to the other, and as well as training the lower leg muscles, is something that, our current training systemically is missing, in my opinion. So.
Right. So Keegan, you played college football and semi-professional football, and tell us about the psychological impact when you experienced these injuries, these ACL injuries.
Yep. So as you alluded to, I tore both ACLs, one on my left, one on my right. And for me personally, I can't speak to everyone, but it was more so devastating psychologically than physically, because you have your legs, obviously, which as an athlete, I mean, they're your They're your main tools. I mean, and they kind of failed you and you don't particularly know why. And not only that, you're kind of removed from your sport, which acts for many athletes as their main coping mechanism. So if you have a bad day, you go out to practice, you work, a little extra hard, to make sure that the rest of your day is good. You have a good practice, you typically have a good day. It's kind of how those things work. And if you don't have a good practice, you can watch film, you know what to do physically to have a better day. There's not a lot of athletes that are focusing on the psychological skills to handle everyday life without their sport. So again, if they're removed from that, they're kind of left to their own devices as far as other coping mechanisms that aren't exactly normally, they're not normally the healthiest of coping mechanisms. So, and that coupled with the fact that an ACL injury is, a particularly long rehabilitation period, the literature shows that, for the best results, you need to wait over a year. You know, on day 366, the efficacy of your rehab, skyrockets for whatever reason. No one can really explain that, but that's the current literature anyways.
Right. So tell us how you were feeling for those first weeks and months after your injuries. How did it affect you?
Mm-hmm. So I'm a very visual person. So I distinctly remember after my first ACL injury, I was a junior in college. It was fall camp, which is when, back in my day, now I sound like I'm 80 years old, but we had two-a-days. And I tore it during the first practice of the day. And I was sitting on, everyone has seen, whether it's on SportsCenter, the news, those stupid carts that they carry off football players on. So I was sitting on the back of that after it was a one-on-one drill, like a pass rush drill. I played defense when I tore my ACL. And I remember sitting on the back of that cart and almost feeling like I was sinking. And if you imagine you're on a lake and right above that lake is everything you've ever wanted as far as a, sport accomplishments, like your ideal world, what your ideal goals were within your sport, like whether that be a video, whether that be a picture. I felt like I was slowly sinking into the ground and getting farther and farther away from, what I had always dreamed of doing, because it just like, everyone else who plays sports, you want to continue to progress and, move up to professional or, whatever the case may be. But I just kind of felt like, that injury that I never thought could happen to me, I thought it was only something that happened on SportsCenter, but I felt like I was getting farther and farther away from my dreams. And it's a very, dark place that athletes usually find themselves in. And I distinctly remember being alone in that moment and no one, and I had all the resources really anyone would ever want as far as an athlete. I had athletic trainers, I had physical therapists, I had sports scientists that were all working with me on my return to play. And, no one even broached the subject of the psychological side of this injury, which, I'm kind of firmly planting myself in that area now.
Right. So that takes us to ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy. Where did you hear about this and how did this change your approach?
Yeah. So, I always have to claim I am a very, slow learner, unfortunately. So I'd love to claim that after my second ACL injury, I started going to therapy, and I learned all these skills just due to that. But I unfortunately can't claim that. After my second ACL injury, I really started to kind of spiral as far as my life went, because I was going down that same dark path, but I knew I was essentially done playing. So it just kind of took me to new depths. I started to abuse substances like alcohol and drugs, and I made some very poor relationship decisions. And I started dating who I would find out would be a very severe alcoholic. And as a result of that relationship, endured a lot of emotional abuse, kind of culminating in me being suicidal. So after I got out of that, and I knew obviously my life was going to go, one of two ways. I either need to make a drastic change or, you know, my life's not really going to end up the way I want it to. So I started going to therapy. And believe it or not, that's actually where I got even more frustrated.
Because
believe it or not, that was actually because I knew I was doing what I needed to, but I wasn't seeing the progress I wanted.
So you just became more and more discouraged then as a result of it. Is that right?
Yeah. I was very, very irritated that I just wasn't seeing any progress with traditional cognitive behavioral therapy. It's likely just, you know, the way my mind works. I'm one of those people, if you say, hey, don't look over there, you know, don't think that, I will stare over there and I will think that thought 8 times harder than I ever had before.
And I think you're describing almost every human being I know.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of efficacy behind CBT. I tried so hard and I couldn't see any progress. So I'm a person who, if I don't know something, I'll scour the internet and try to find it. So I looked all over the internet and found acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT, found a therapist who practiced ACT, and started working with them. And I still do, you know, to this day, more intermittently than before. But in that first session, you know, I started to take a very small, but I took a measured step forward. You know, it's not a magic pill or anything like that, but I was able to see just a little bit of improvement and something that I could, you know, use that was more conducive to my brain. So I've been slowly climbing ever since that day.
Wow. Well, tell us more about what ACT is.
Yeah.
How does it work?
Yep. So it's kind of like a first or second cousin to cognitive behavioral therapy, as far as, you know, the way it's set up. It was founded by Dr. Stephen Hayes. He's kind of like the godfather of the intervention. And it has six, you know, foundational principles. There's diffusion, which was the small step that started to slowly guide me out of that hole. There's acceptance, there's mindfulness, self as a context, values, and purposeful action. So those are kind of the main tenets. And essentially the difference is usually cognitive behavioral therapy is looking to minimize the negative symptomology that you're going through. For me, it was the perseverative thought that, you know, I am broken. I broke, you know, I both my legs got screwed up, and, you know, psychologically, I was kind of screwed up at the time. I had this thought that was always kind of running through my head. I'm broken. No one's going to want to be with me, this, that, and the other thing. Whereas ACT more so looks to kind of prepare you for the inevitable. It's not trying to redirect you or make you avoid those difficult feelings. It's giving you the tools to sit there and go through what you're going through and prepare for, you know, the inevitable. You're not going to live a full life unless you have some hardship throughout the way. So it kind of is just giving you the skills necessary to walk through those challenges.
Right. So you really embraced this. And then later you came to a point where you actually wrote a book about this called Torn: Overcoming the Psychological Challenges Post ACL Injury. Tell us when you made the decision to write this book and how you arrived there.
Yep. So as part of my therapy, my therapist prescribed, I guess, that I journal quite a bit. I'm a writer just naturally. I have a very busy brain, I guess. So getting things out on paper has always been very beneficial just to my day-to-day life. So I was journaling through different situations throughout my life, starting my probably freshman year of high school with, you know, I would have panic attacks and kind of have to go to the bathroom, even though I, you know, wasn't going to the bathroom, just to get a respite from, you know, the stresses of the day, all the way through the emotionally abusive relationship that I had, you know, all the sports, you know, injuries and those things as well, but just how my life would have been better if I would have had ACT in those times. So as far as when I decided to write the book, it was when I was, you know, a while into therapy and had this big, you know, journal essentially of just my different experiences, different stories of my life. And, you know, I went, well, you know, other people probably have had similar issues as far as, you know, what they're feeling after these injuries, and then, you know, any subsequent events that follow it. So I just literally plugged in literature behind it, not too heavy, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't just making bold-faced claims, and you know, put the book together rather organically. It wasn't a, you know, sit down for 3 months and write kind of thing. It was you know, rather quick, and it was a very cathartic process. So I definitely it helped me just as much as it will help anyone else, I hope.
Well, in the book, you were able to tell your stories just from the heart. And I think readers are really, really relating to that and have just embraced this book 100%. Tell us some of the feedback you received from writing this book.
Yeah, it's been kind of a surreal experience, just as far as every, you know, couple days or week or whatever the case may be, I'll have a reader reach out who's, in middle school or high school or college. Who went through this injury and, you know, it really related to it, and they've shared it with some of their friends. And, you know, I even had a cute younger lady who had told me that she did a book report on my book, and it was very weird reading the email because it just doesn't feel real at this point, because everyone assumes, that once, you know, sports were my life. And there are many of, you know, my clients or, you know, just throughout the world, there's a lot of people whose sports really are their lives. And they feel as though when they're done with their sport, they'll never feel that, you know, passion again for anything. And I personally, if you find, you know, a way to help people that's very meaningful to you, you can feel that throughout the, you know, the entire lifespan, but you really got to do some soul searching to find what that is. And usually you're going to have to dig into a point in your life where you did or are having a lot of pain and sit with that and kind of find your purpose moving forward because of that pain, because you can't have pain without love. So.
Right. Interesting. Yes. Well, I recently finished a book by David Goggins, who is a Navy SEAL, and he talked a lot about his knee injury and the frustrations and how he had a surgery and he felt like the surgeon wasn't being upfront with him about what he found. And then he was being led to believe he was going to be okay, but really he didn't feel like, you know, he had been treated well. What do you think? Is that an experience that a lot of people have with ACL injuries?
I'll choose my words carefully. I believe knee surgeries just as a whole, whether that's, you know, meniscus repairs, ACL repairs, or total knee surgeries, they're kind of giving you a ideal. And in some cases, you know, I'm sure it is the best option. But in my opinion, it's a very common occurrence to where someone goes through a surgery and is expecting one thing and realizes that there's actually much more work that needs done on the tail end. The therapy and, you know, your daily activity and function are more important than the surgery. Many times it's probably a 60-40, even though, again, I'll never claim to be able to do what surgeons do. But as far as your recovery and getting, you know, maybe where you want in regard to your daily activity, getting back to where you were pre-injury is more so on your activity and your physical therapy. You know, in my opinion, and a lot of times, even the people who are doing the physical therapy, you know, God bless them, they probably haven't went through an ACL injury. And if they have, that makes it much easier for them to relate and understand the very specific issues that these patients are going through, because it's hard to explain. When I had both my knees done, it almost feels, it's kind of weird to say, but it almost feels like a leg transplant, because even though you're only changing, you know, a very small, I mean, it's just a ligament. It's an inch by an inch and a half or whatever it is. It's very small, but your leg just doesn't feel when you're doing movements the way you've, you know, you grew up with or the way you're accustomed to. And then if you're an athlete or an active person, you're used to doing these same movements and them feeling a certain way. So when they don't, it's very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. Can you tell us a story about someone you've worked with that you've really helped them to transition from a tough place, like maybe you were in, and then to move to a place where they felt really empowered?
Of course. So this last summer, I worked with a gentleman who even played. He was in the same position group I was in. Is a football player. He was a college football player. He tore his ACL. He was kind of on the up and up, which is always frustrating when you're improving a lot and then you injure yourself. And he was just having a really hard time with not so much like a psychological issue where he had like a lot of depression or anything like that. But it's one of the main issues that a lot of these people are going through is a fear of re-injury. It's they call it a kinesiophobia, and it's very difficult because the return to play parameters that most therapists take you through. I don't know if you're familiar at all, but they're not nearly difficult enough for an athlete to feel like, oh, I did that. Now I can go, in this case, line up across from a 320-pound guy who may or may not dive at my knee. They're not exactly conducive to you. Usually need to stress your, it's my opinion anyway, that you need to stress your knee much more in your training and rehabilitation than your sport can, which in some cases is very difficult, but you have to do that in order to feel comfortable coming back. So I say that just with the understanding that that's kind of what I had to lead this gentleman through, because he didn't feel like he was quite ready. So I took him through some stuff that I have found throughout my my journey and looking through, because I still love to train, and I've had to really alter how I train in order to feel better. Because anyone with any knee injury or knee pain will tell you it's very common to go work out because you love working out, but then 2, 3, 4 days later still have knee pain. Well, that's kind of a deterrent from doing, whether that be your sport or whether that be just doing what you love, which is working out. So anything that makes you feel better usually is the right way to keep pushing. As far as your knee, it's not going to be like something fun. I'm not saying that, but as far as something that makes you feel better after the workout, it's usually, you're going in the right direction. So I gave him kind of what I had found worked best for ACL injuries specifically, because I had been particularly frustrated with that, as you alluded to, Goggins was. So I gave him actually more physical help and just a different outlook on what to do, how to approach it. And he had a very successful year this last year, and I couldn't be more proud of him. I don't talk with him as much as I did, in the thick of it, but I'm, very proud of him for sure.
Wow, that's a fantastic story. Yeah, Keegan, I've worked in bullying prevention for a long time, and I don't know how this maybe dovetails with work that you've done, but do you have a story about bullying that somehow relates to mindfulness where, maybe mindfulness would have made a difference? I don't know if you have something that you can share with us about this or not.
I mean, I guess bullying would be there's lots of, as you know, there's lots of forms of bullying.
Totally.
And with people, myself and then people I work with, deal with a very specific kind of this kind of torment, whether you want to call it bullying or not. So these injuries, whether it be, an Achilles tear, a Tommy John injury, and overhead throwing athletes, or ACL injuries, as I said, they're very long recovery periods. And for most of that recovery period, they look fine. We're not walking around with a cast. We're not, it's very internal that's healing. So because of that, you always have, those athletes, unfortunately, are not known for being the biggest brainiacs in the world. And in some cases, that's true. You always have those people who will ask you, hey, why aren't you back? You look fine. I saw you doing this, that, and the other thing in the gym. Come back out to practice. You deal with that a lot, and it's very, very frustrating because they don't understand, which I'm glad they haven't had this injury, but it's very frustrating nevertheless. So what I'd say is when I had that experience personally, I didn't have these skills. But when I talk with my clients, the best way to deal with any negative emotion, because there's no way to go through that type of situation and not have, you know, some level of negative emotions. And the best way to deal with any negative emotions is counter to what kind of the, you know, counter to what society would say to do. Most people would say, you know, if you feel bad, you know, something's wrong. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. So if you sit there with those negative emotions, usually, and just focus on them, focus on why you're feeling them, and just try to sit there with them, they actually minimize much quicker than if you try to push them to the side and don't deal with them. Because essentially what you're doing is you're kind of tricking your brain into going, okay, we don't want to think about that. But you don't realize that as you do that, you're giving it almost more power over you. So I always imagine, you know, pushing, like sitting in a dollhouse almost. And if you push something outside, it's almost like a balloon creeping back in, like getting stronger and pushing back against the dollhouse. And you can see it like kind of encroaching upon your space. That's how I feel about, you know, negative emotions that you're not sitting and dealing with. So that's definitely a very common bullying experience that my clients as well as I dealt with.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Keegan, as we move forward toward the end of the interview, I want to ask you five quick answer questions. And so just 30-second answers are perfect. The first one is this: who is one person who has been a powerful mindfulness influence in your life?
Mindfulness influence. I would say I'm a big podcast guy.
Yeah.
Dr. John Deloney has been fantastic. Just some of the things he said, he doesn't speak usually directly about mindfulness, but some of the things that he say really gets me to take a step back and really live in the moment. So indirectly, he helps me quite a bit. Yeah, that'd be my answer.
Okay. Dr. John Deloney. Do you know the name of his podcast?
The Dr. John Deloney Show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Emotions. Let's talk about emotions. And you've talked about emotions a fair amount already. But how has mindfulness changed how you deal with your emotions?
Mindfulness has changed how I deal with my emotions by, again, actually sitting with them. And actually focusing on them, because it almost minimizes them. It's the same thing I do with my, if I feel a panic attack or heavy anxiety coming on, I do the exact same thing. And I found it almost minimizes the strength, or the power the emotions or anxiety have over me.
Right. My next question is about breathing, and this is important to most athletes. Is there, something you can share with us about breathing and how that has helped you through this whole thing?
Yep, for sure. So one practice that I got into as I was getting out of those difficult situations is my therapist had me take a cold shower. And it's not for the reasons, you know, you might think. There's a plethora of you know, health benefits to cold showers, but actually it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you still have to be able to, if you practice your breathing during that, I found it was a very good way to prepare myself. Like say pregame, some people get, you know, rather anxious prior to games. Personally, I was a very superstitious person. So before my first start, I actually threw up. So then every subsequent start I had to throw up. So a lot of athletes are very much, very, very much like that. So I would say that gets you in the same type of hostile environment to where you still have to really focus on your breathing, even though it's extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. Yeah. Well, let's go on with the next question. And that's about a book. And your book, I recommend it. I know a lot of other people have recommended it too, because I've looked over the reviews online. The book you wrote is called Torn overcoming the psychological challenges post ACL injury. Are there any other books you would recommend on this topic of mindfulness or related to sports injury or anything like that?
Oh, what was the name of the one I read in January? This is going to drive me insane. It's a lime green cover. I'm a very visual person, so it always frustrates me.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, I'm just going to jump in here and tell you the book that Dr. Headley couldn't think of at that moment in time. And the book I looked at afterwards, it's called Rebound, Train Your Mind to Bounce Back Stronger from Sports Injuries. It's by Carrie Jackson Cheadle and Cindy Kuzma. So check out that book, Rebound. Mindful Tribe, you can always go to my show notes, mindfulnessmode.com, and you can check it out there. And my last question is about apps. Are there any apps at all that you use that can help with mindfulness or your mindset?
Again, for me, I tend to focus on writing for my mindfulness, actually. So I use, I believe it's called Writerly. It's daily prompts of just getting my thoughts out. But as far as apps that more people are probably apt to listen to, it's kind of the typical ones like Calm, you know, those type of apps. But actually, because those cost money too, so I always feel bad recommending those to clients. But there's a ton of YouTube content. Like, yeah, I mean, you can never quantify how many hours there are out there. Just if you find a particular creator that you enjoy, I would highly recommend doing that as well, because that's what I did when I was still in school and, you know, particularly broke. So I couldn't recommend that any more, because you never feel more at peace, I think, personally, whether you're, you know, just get done from church and praying, or you just finish a, you know, a meditation session, or, you know, a progressive relaxation session, or, you know, the things I tend to lean more to. But there's all kinds of different mindfulness creators out there. I recommend finding one you like and kind of clinging to them.
Yeah, good advice. And I like your advice about Writerly as well, because, yeah, it's true. Just writing down your thoughts, journaling, you know, I can't overemphasize how important that is, and it sounds like it's really worked for you too. As we finish up the interview, I want to ask you for any final words of advice you would have for any of our Mindful Tribe listeners out there. Maybe you've experienced a sports injury, maybe you're feeling discouraged and down, and like you're just not sure where to head. Maybe you've got some advice for that type of listener.
Yeah, definitely. What I would say, the big thing that I always like to focus on is removing yourself from technology, because it's extremely difficult to be mindful when your brain is going in 18 places at once. Living where you are is, you know, particularly difficult in this age than it has been in any other time in human history, because we have so many different distractions. So I would say, as hard as it is, schedule time, you know, where you can be away from your phone, whether that's 10 minutes, half an hour, whatever you can afford throughout your day, to just be unplugged and be truly present with yourself, because you'll be surprised how many things you're really missing, you know, whether it be visually, sounds, any kind of thing where you're missing what's truly going on around you. And I think that's very, very important. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's good advice. Well, Dr. Headley, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this. And, you know, it's just so important. There are a lot of people out there who are struggling with these kinds of issues. And I want to really thank you for doing the work that you do and putting that book out there and helping people in the world.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Bruce.
Okay, all the best to you. Bye now. Hey, Mindful Tribe, thanks for listening to the show today. And for me, this was really enlightening, because I have friends who are experiencing a lot of trouble with sports injuries and the psychological effects. And speaking of those psychological effects, I mean, I'm meeting more and more people who are living with anxiety, stress, they're stuck, they can't figure out why they can't move forward. And as you know, I'm a mindfulness life coach, and I do hypnosis to help people move through that anxiety and move through what's holding them back. And that's what really charges me up in life, is helping other people through these challenges. And so I don't know if you're experiencing some of these challenges or not, but one of the first places to start is to become disciplined about getting focused and getting grounded. And you can do that with just doing some meditation. And that may sound easy when I say, you know, just do some meditation, but if you ever tried it, you might know it's not necessarily that easy for everybody. Well, I'm going to offer to do a personalized guided meditation just for you. I will record it with you in mind. You know, share with me a couple of things that you're experiencing in your life. I will incorporate that into the guided meditation and make it all yours. And I will send you this recording made specifically for you. Just send me an email, bruce@mindfulnessmode.com. This is yours for free for being a listener on Mindfulness Mode. So just do that today. Don't hesitate. Send me an email and I'll create that personalized meditation for you. And with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.